Abe had fought for breath, his fingers moving convulsively on Christy's sleeve, her bright red hair framing his pale face. His eyes had flickered, seeking Ryan, and finding him.
It doesn't hurt but a blasted arrow from Newt's sake. Be funny if...
And they'd left him. That was the way. If Abe had been an inch or so nearer death, or if the attacking Indians had been a little closer, then Ryan would have put a bullet through the wounded man's skull. But there was always a chance, even for someone who had the Grim Reaper's scythe laid across his neck. And Abe had pulled through. How many in here, Abe?
You make numbers 9 and 10.
You ever say anything without sounding like you're about to burst into tears?
Fuck you!
Better. Abe, I...
Ryan, you're going to try to shoot off at the mouth about leaving me to die up in the darks. Please don't.
You know how it was.
Yeah, of course I do. Do the same for you someday. Live by the traitor's rules and you damn often finish up getting chilled by the same rules. You did what you had to do. I hit up. Managed to push the arrow clear through my neck. Never pull it through with a barbed hunting tip to it. I bled some, slept some. Here I am. You can hear it hasn't done much for my throat, though.
You never were one of the Lord's chosen singers, Abe. Despite the intense danger of their position in the heart of the Sticky's camp, Ryan's heart was lifted by once again meeting up with a tall, mustached man.
Where did Charlie catch you?
You didn't recognize him, Abe?
No. Why? I'm kind of odd for a Sticky, but I never seen him before.
You have. He knew me. Lucky he didn't recognize you as well.
I don't recall. Sticky that walks and talks like a norm is something special. You think I'd have remembered him?
A little kid with straw hair. The party we rescued from Gert Wolfram's gang, not far from Fishmouth's Bar in the Darks.
Oh, that was little Charlie, was it? You know, if I'd known what he was going to grow up to be, I'd have slit the bastard's neck from ear to ear.
Guard coming.
There were feet slapping bare on the stones above them, and the sensation of someone standing there, listening closely.
Hope the sucker-handed bastard doesn't piss on us again. Did it last night.
Can we all get some rest now?
It was cold in the underground cell, which was hewn from the bare sandstone. But the press of bodies checked the temperature from dropping too low. As the others slipped into sleep, Ryan stayed awake, trying to marshal his thoughts, trying to make plans to cover any contingency. The way it looked was that Charlie would keep his word and use their execution as an example of his own power over norms. And with the force he seemed to have at his disposal, it would be difficult to do too much about it. If things came down to the wire, then Ryan would at least try to take the leader of the Stickies with him, even if it meant tearing Charlie's carotid artery open with his teeth. Ryan had been in many tight spots in his life, and he was still alive. But he recalled something the traitor had said to him as they'd lain under a towering sycamore, not long before the sick old man had done his disappearing act. The familiar black stogie had been sending coils of smoke wreathing up into the evening air.
It's been a good day. Odd when you think that we're all bound to die sometime.
Ryan finally closed his eye and entered the darkness with the pessimistic thought that this might at last be the time for him and Christy. In the morning, Ryan's wounded left arm was still tender. Christy peeled off the makeshift bandage, trying to see how it looked in the gloom of the kiva.
Seems to be healing.
Ryan flexed his fingers, tightening the muscles of the forearm.
Kind of stiff.
I think it's clean, Mother.
The small circular scabs on Christy's face from Charlie's attention were already almost vanished. She healed faster than anyone Ryan had ever come across. Now there was enough light to see their fellow captives. Abe was the oldest there, looking much as he had when they last saw him. There was a scar the size of a nickel on one side of his neck, and a larger cicatrix on the other side of where the Indian arrow had been pushed all the way through. He still had a droopy mustache and wore his graying hair tied back in a long ponytail. He seemed a little skinnier than Ryan remembered him.
Let me introduce you to the others.
There was Harold. He was chubby, in his late 20s, and had a pair of battered spectacles hanging from a cord around his neck. He'd been a traveling seller of candies and had been caught by a patrol of the Stickies a week earlier.
There should be some sort of Baron Sec man around here to rescue us.
No Baron, no Sec patrols, no rescue.
Been telling that for days, but the Stoop clings to his fancies.
You're a Stoop!
Helga was around 40, with salt and pepper hair that was scraped back off her face and tied in a tight knot. She had the freckled, hard complexion of someone who had spent most of her life outdoors. She'd run a spread about 80 miles to the west, and had actually met Christina and Jack Lauren a couple of times. There were five other prisoners. Danny, who had worked as ramrod on Helga's sheep farm, was in his early 30s, tall and lean. He'd broken his left ankle trying to escape from the Stickies' attack, and was suffering constant pain from it. Bob Leonard was a prematurely bald man of 25, who'd been trapping beaver in the high country to the northwest. He'd been attacked by a grizzly when he was 15, and bore dreadful facial scars, including damage to his mouth that made his speech difficult to understand. His wife, Dorina, looked no more than 12 years old, yet she claimed she'd lost three children to a cholera outbreak up in Silver City. The Stickies had had their way with her countless times. Her brother, Red Folsom, was sometimes called Bitter Creek Folsom. He'd been a part of the team of trappers and hunters that had stumbled into a ranging patrol of Stickies. He was a bluff, strongly built man with chestnut hair and had a finger missing from his left hand.
Lost it in one of my own beaver traps.
The rest of their group had been butchered in the initial attack by the muties. The last of the Stickies' prisoners was a traveling preacher, the very Reverend Joe Bob Jarman. He was 6 feet 3 inches tall, with white hair that touched his shoulders, and wore a heavy suit of black material.
All a part of the rich and mysterious pattern of the Lord Jesus.
How do you figure that?
I am a flask being tested in the white heat of the furnace of wickedness. These Stickies are my own personal trial to find out if my faith comes up to the mark.
And does it?
Of course, Brother Calder.
Ryan knew from previous experience that one of the sure signs of the religious crazies that festered in parts of Deathlands was that they always called you brother.
And I shall meet their every challenge.
They're going to kill you, Reverend. Chill us all.
You will fall, Sister Christie, but on the third day I shall rise again, and I will sit upon the right hand of the Lord of hosts.
Wish I could be there to see it, Reverend.
Ryan sat close to Christie, his feet sticking out toward the center of the cramped kiva. If Charlie collected any more prisoners, it would be unbearably crowded. He looked around at their 8 fellow captives, trying to weigh them up, ready for the moment when concerted action might save some of their lives. He had no idea of how, when, or where that moment might come, or whether it would come at all, but he had to be ready. Abe would do real well. Couldn't look for anyone much better to stand at your shoulder when the full metal jacket started flying. There were 2 or 3 other good possibilities for when the shit hit the fan. Bitter Creek Folsom was a man who seemed like he could look after himself in a tight spot. Same with his younger colleague, Bob Leonard, though the man's problems with speech could prove difficult. If it wasn't for his broken ankle, Danny would also have taken right and center in any combat line, but he could barely stand. The preacher didn't figure in Ryan's plan. Ryan had never met a preacher worth a flying fart when steel flashed and blood spurted. Little Dorina Leonard looked like a spitball could put her on her back, but Ryan reserved judgment on her. He had vivid memories of small-boned women with killer's eyes. Helga had the up-and-walking good look of a woman used to handling trouble in any size or shape. A useful person if you wanted a horse gelded, or a baby birthed, or a renegade gut shot. Then there was Harold Lord from Castle Rock, way out east. A soft boy who looked like he'd mess himself if anyone raised a blaster anywhere near him. JB used to say that you could pick out your fighters, give them marks on a scale from 1 to 20, and then add them all up. Then you had an idea of how you might line up against the opposition. On that basis, Ryan would give himself 19 and Christie 18. Abe was at least a 16. Red Folsom and his partner would rate about 13s each. Give Helga the same. Joe Bob Jarman didn't get to first base to score. Danny might have been a 12, but his ankle dropped him to a fat 0. Dorina could score anywhere between a 1 and a 10. Call her a 5. Ryan generously gave Harold a 2.
What are you doing, Lover?
Trying to work out what our combat total would be.
JB's magic formula? What do we add up to?
I'm trying to work that out.
Didn't JB say that if you divided the total score by the number of people in your group, it had to average at least 10? Well, there's